Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome back to the NFL Front Office Show. I'm your host, Brian Hughes. My co-host today, as always, is Rodri Jones. He'll be in the kitchen here in a moment. Today is the last episode of the NFL Front Office Show before the NFL Draft, and we have had quite a turn of events. If you look at what has transpired over the last week, there's been a lot of things that have gone on. We've had some arrests. We've had some failed drug tests that have come out. We have had some medical reports that have not been helpful, if you will, for players. So we've definitely had a lot of information that has surfaced in regards to how this could affect NFL drafts, draft prospects, and their draft stock. And we're definitely going to get into that. We should talk about some of the news and notes, if you will, from around the league before we get too far in. Greg Hardy was suspended for 10 games for domestic violence. We will get into this topic a little bit more. Was it fair? Was it not fair? Definitely needs to be at least talked about. Remember, Greg Hardy was not convicted of any crime, and the charges were dropped. I know the pictures were pretty graphic. Redskins do exercise the 2016 fifth-year option on RG3's contract. What does this mean? Does this now mean he is the starting quarterback moving forward? Ravens and cornerback Jimmy Smith agreed to a contract extension, 4 years, or excuse me, 5 years, $48 million. So we will talk a little bit about that. Johnny Manziel is out of rehab and ready for Hard Knocks. That's right. Cleveland Browns will be on the show Hard Knocks. So we'll talk a little bit about what that could mean for the Cleveland Browns. Good idea, bad idea. We're also going to talk about the schedule that was released. And finally, we're going to talk a little bit about trade rumors that are floating around the NFL. There's several trade rumors that we've hearing. You know, we've heard the Tennessee Titans may be interested in potentially trading the number 2 overall pick in order to acquire a talented player or picks. One of those such trade scenarios that we've tossed around here in the kitchen for at least 3-4 weeks is the possible move that San Diego could make by trading Phillip Rivers. So we will explore that a little bit as well. I think that the whole landscape of the draft this year is interesting because I think every year when you look at the draft, I think that there is probably, without question, if you look at last year, probably 20, 30, 40 players that you can say, hey, that guy is an elite talent. That guy is one of the best players in college football. And he's shown that success, dominated college football for an extended period of time. I don't know if you can say that about this year's group of wide receivers. For example, you look at a guy like Kevin White, a wide receiver who's unbelievably talented, but he has 1 year, of real production. And a lot of people are talking about him going in the first round. You know, not just the first round, but the top 10 picks because of the size and the speed. And I know he had a great year at West Virginia. But, you know, me personally, I always get a little nervous when I see guys that come into the league with 1 year of production. You know, you want to see that sustainability. You want to see the fact that they've done it for multiple years. Another guy, Quentin Rollins, you know, the talented corner. A lot of people are saying, hey, I think he's the best corner, you know, corner in this draft. 1 year of production. Before his senior year, he pretty much played basketball as his primary focus. So we're going to get into some of the trade scenarios. We're going to talk a little bit about the draft. We're going to talk about some of the news and notes. But before we go any further, let me go ahead and enter my co-host today, that's been with me every step of the way on the show, Mr. Rodri Jones. Rodri, how you doing today, buddy?
Hey, buddy, good to be on. Just really excited about the draft. Just 2 days to go, and it's business time, buddy.
Absolutely. So, I was just telling some of the listeners that we have. We got chat room is filling up. We do have some callers in queue that are just listening. That for me, Rodri, we've done our research. We've done our position by position analysis. I think that this is a draft that 5 years from now, we could look back and say, there was only four or five guys that were real difference makers that went in round one. Or we could say, hey, you know what, that entire first round was great. But when you look at the question marks, and I'm just naming a couple of them that could be potential first round guys, like, we said Quentin Rollins, Kevin White, Eric Armstead, these guys that have had freakish seasons, but have not sustained it. It has not been something where you've seen a high level of success for multiple years. It's, 1 year of production and out, leaving early. What's your thought on this draft? Would you agree with me that this is in large part a boom or bust draft? We could look back and everybody's talking about how great the draft is, but we could look back a couple of years from now and also say this is potentially one of the worst drafts that we've had in the last 10 years. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, no question. I think that's the thing with a draft, Bray. I've always thought you've got to look back at a kid's career, or on the whole, you've got to look back at his whole college career. You've got to look back at his freshman year, sophomore year, and senior year. And you just got to judge it all on all three. You look at a guy like PJ Williams, who had MVP of the, of the national championship game against Auburn a few years ago. And to me, that game, he's been in my top 10 since then. And, looking at the way he's dropped down boards, it's quite crazy. You look at a guy like Le'Veon Bell, who had a fantastic, sophomore season at Michigan State, and then comes to his last season, gets injured, sort of struggles coming back from injury, and then is just probably the best running back in the league at the moment. So, we just never know. And the proof's in the pudding, Brian. We look back in 3 years' time, like you said, and see how these players play, and then we judge them on that. Look at Teddy Bridgewater last year. I thought he was outstanding at Louisville, yet, he comes into the off-season evaluation process, and he goes to the combine, doesn't really light up his pro day, gets drafted last pick in the first round. I think he was the best quarterback in football last year. Derek Carr also, beats up the Johnny Manziel. So, really, we just got to look at it as a whole and give it time to, give these players time to play, give them the 3 years they need, and then afterwards we can look back and judge as we do with every draft, Look at the Pittsburgh 1974 draft. They did get four guys from the Hall of Fame, And who would have said that 3 years from that date? So, we just wait and see how it goes, and it's exciting to see how they're going to play out.
I think the point you bring up, though, Rodri, is a great one, because I can remember 2 years ago when we were evaluating running backs on this show. At that time, the co-host, my co-host at the time was James Greenwood, and I told him, I want to say he had Le'Veon Bell ranked like number four or five, and I told him, look, I don't even have this kid in my top five. There's some injury issues there. I'm not sure how well he catches the ball out of the backfield. I don't think he's a three-down back. And some of this, I will tell you, Rodri, I think, everybody always talks about the players. We never talk about the team that's actually developing the talent. Maybe we should give kudos to a team like the Steelers for developing Le'Veon Bell. Now, granted, he was good. He was pretty good right out the box. But he wasn't as good his rookie year as he was his sophomore year. The way they set up their scheme for him, I just think that, if you were to make a pie and you were to assign different values as to overall success of an individual, very possible that 50% of that is on the player, his talent, his skill, his ability to learn, what have you. But I think you have to assign at least 25% of that to the team and as far as how they develop him, what type of scheme that they run, does it fit what he wants to do, how they help this kid reach and maximize his goals, you know. You know, obviously where you live can have an influence on that, what team drafted you, all that. But I'm just saying, you know, I don't think in the draft world that we talk nearly enough about fit. You know, nearly enough about, you know, X guy fitting X team and it working out. And so I appreciate you bringing up, you know, a couple of those names. I do want to get into some of the news and notes because I got a pretty interesting show planned, Rodri, and I think that you'll find it interesting. I dug through this last week, a lot of the trade rumors and, you know, a lot of the NFL insiders that have put up possible trade scenarios. And what I want to do is I want to bring those up on this show. I have 10 of them, and I want to bring them up. We can discuss them, talk about the plausibility, how likely it is to happen, and we'll spend a little bit of time, and then we'll look back next week after the draft, and we'll see if any of these happened, and then were we right, were we wrong. But without any further ado, let's talk about our first headline in the NFL, and that is Greg Hardy suspended 10 games for violating the code of conduct policy for the NFL. Rodri, I want to get your take on this because I'll be honest with you. I can't evaluate whether or not this guy did the crime. Those of you who are not familiar with this, Greg Hardy allegedly, he was a former defensive end from the Carolina Panthers. While with them, he supposedly had beat up his girlfriend. They posted pictures of it. It looked pretty bad, but all the charges were dropped, Rodri, as you know. 10 games to me seems very excessive for charges that were dropped. You know, I feel like this is strictly based on the fact that they botched the Ray Rice thing, and now they're trying to make up for it. They'd rather over-punish than under-punish. What's your thoughts on this?
Yeah, you know, you talk about beating women, I got no time for that at all. It's just, I mean, straight, but, you know, you look at Greg Hardy and you look at the Ray Rice situation last year, the way that was sort of covered up before the video came out. To me, I think this is the Cowboys just sort of covering their backs in case anything does come out from it. They don't want to be left in the same situation as the Baltimore Ravens were left in last year. We seen last offseason what happened to that. I mean, coming in before the video, it was just like a slap on the wrist for Ray Rice, and he was just going to go on with his career as it was. Following the video, you know, he was terminated from the league. So, massive, harsh punishment. I think the Cowboys are giving him this punishment just in case. They play, you know, the NFL, to me, has always been a copycat league. You know, you see a situation happen, and then other teams, other franchises, other businesses want to make sure the same thing doesn't happen to them. So, they sort of cover their backs. To me, that's what we get in here, Brian. And, I can see Greg Hardy, you know, he deserves to be punished. If his photo's flying about, and you know, he's got a bit of a history for it, bit of a temper, you know, likes to hit women, and, you know, he deserves what he gets, as far as I'm concerned. I got a lot of respect for him as a player. He played great for the Carolina Panthers, and he gets to the quarterback. All that goes out the window when you hit a woman about it. I got absolutely no time for it. And, you know, these guys are big physical dudes, and they can do a lot of damage. So, you know, when you hit the women, you're just a coward. And, you know, I think his teammates will sort of look at that also, and he'll get that from his teammates, so they know coming in that he's going to be stricken out of the locker room, and deservedly so. And, you know, we'll see in time if anything else comes of this, what his girlfriend says, you know, stuff like that. That's just what it is. Cowboys are covering their backs and just making sure that nothing comes of it, because then if something does come of it, they can say, oh, at least we give him a harsh penalty, we give him a good couple of games. And just covering their backs, really. But they're losing a good player for 10 games right there, Bri. And it's just a bad situation.
No, you know, I think you make a great point. You know, obviously I think that the NFL Players Association will lessen this penalty. They'll review it. There's no substantiated evidence. You know, it's he said, she said. It was thrown out of criminal court. I think that the penalty will be reduced, but I think this just goes to show you, in this day and age, with how bad the NFL botched last year, that they're taking a zero-tolerance approach. They would rather be wrong to the player than to be viewed as insensitive towards women. And I got to be honest with you. I don't know. Maybe this is a guy thing coming out. If it is, I apologize, folks. But I think you can discriminate against anybody, race, religion, color, creed, what have you. To me, this is almost a reverse form of discrimination. If the man has not been convicted of a crime, you know, this is almost like profiling, Rodri. And I hate to say this, a sports show, but basically what you're saying is, because of everything that's happened to this point, we'd rather just assume the worst about this guy, and let the chips fall where they may, which I just think is totally wrong. You know, you go back for a perfect example. You look at Ray McDonald, former defensive end for the San Francisco 49ers. He was accused of domestic violence, arrested. Everybody went up in arms. Why didn't they suspend him? The Niners released him. Word just came out this last week. He's been cleared of all charges, of all wrongdoing. Further investigation shows he did not do anything wrong. But this guy lost his livelihood. Granted, he was given another opportunity just strictly based on the fear that he may have done something wrong. I just don't know. This is a dangerous line we're walking.
Yeah. And you know, you look at the certain women out there, Bri, who understand this, you know, and will push players to that point, and you know, not going to even touch them physically, but to sort of make out like they have, because they see money signs, you know, there are, and unfortunately, there are women out there who do that, and to me, in certain situations, they are as bad as the man. So, you know, it's true we say, you know, it's just the franchise that got so much to lose from it, like we've seen from Ray Rice, from a fan's perspective. A jersey sales perspective, there's so much to lose, you know? And it's a tough one because, you know, unless you see it in person and unless it's solid evidence, I don't believe we can sort of judge. But, you know, just the thought of it, I think, Bri, is enough to shock a team and to shock a franchise. And I think just you know, the thought of it happening and the fear-mongering that comes from that, you know? I think that's the biggest thing.
I think what it boils down to, Rodri, and I don't have a stance, good or bad, because I think this is a personal choice. But I think basically what the NFL is saying is we'd rather convict 10 innocent guys than to let one bad guy off without a, you know, harsh penalty. And in a lot of ways, you know, United States judicial system, kind of our code is innocent till proven guilty. You know, we'd rather not send an innocent guy to jail. But the United States judicial system is very similar to this. They would rather send 10 innocent people to jail as opposed to let one guy that may have done the actual crime off free. And that's a personal stance. I'm not going to sit here and debate politics or anything on the show, but that's what it feels like. Like I said, with Ray McDonald last year, people were lobbying. People were standing outside San Francisco headquarters saying that this guy should be suspended. The league had contacted San Francisco and asked them to suspend Ray McDonald, and they said, hey, wait a minute, we want to wait until after there's some kind of police report stating that he did something wrong. To me, it's no different than me saying, you know, hey, I heard Rodri, you know, cuss on the air, and that's a no-no, you know, maybe in our industry, and all of a sudden you get suspended for it without any proof that it actually happened. I mean, it's very similar. I understand that the damage that's being done to women, children, to young ladies, to other men is far more significant than a foul word. I'm just saying, I think it's a very dangerous line that we walk when we suspend somebody based off of no factual evidence, because obviously if there's not enough factual evidence to charge Greg Hardy with a crime, there cannot possibly be enough factual evidence to warrant a 10-game suspension. That's all I'm saying. Let's move on. The Washington Redskins, in a surprise move, Rodri, at least to me, have decided to pick up the fifth-year option on RG3's contract for 2016. That 2016 option will cost them roughly about $15 million, which, you know, is a little bit more spare change than what you would pay a backup quarterback. Are you surprised at all that they did this? And if yes or if no, what does this mean about Washington and RG3's future moving forward?
The fact they picked it up, I think, says the way they want to go forward. I think this is bad news for Kirk Cousins. And the fact that they've sort of backed RG3, I think we're going to see Kirk Cousins get traded during the draft. It's a big move. Jay Gruden, he's seen something in RG3. Like, they needed to put their heads together. They needed to decide on a quarterback for me there. Put their arms around one guy and go ahead with one. And I think this is a sign that they've done that now. We know for a fact every team has been successful. Has put all their chips on one quarterback's back and just gone with that. RG3's had his struggles with injury. I didn't like the fact that they drafted Kirk Cousins just after him a few years ago. To me, from day one, he's been sort of put in a situation he shouldn't have been put into, fighting for his spot. And I think we're just seeing him getting more back up this year now. And I can see Kirk Cousins going and getting traded draft day. I think Kirk Cousins is a very talented quarterback, Michigan State. He's a talented kid and he can play well. And I think a team will be wise to trade up for him. And, we'll see how it goes. But, I think to me, it's just the Redskins putting all their chips on the table with RG3. And Coach Gruden, he's a good quarterback's coach. He knows his offense, and I believe in RG3. I think if he can stay healthy, if he can learn from his mistakes in the past where he'd run outside, and kid needs to slide, he needs to get down on the floor a bit more and stop taking those unnecessary hits. And if he can do that, then he can take the Redskins to the promised land because he's that talented. I think we've seen signs of it already, Bri, but. He just needs to prove it now. But it's a good move. I think it's a good move. I know it eats into their cap a lot, and it is a lot. But you sort of need to do that for a quarterback. You lose a Brian Arakpo, so you can save money there. And I think they putting all their chips on the table with RG3 is the way to go. I can't fault the move. I believe in RG3. I'm an RG3 fan, and I think he can be an elite quarterback in this league. And to me, this is a great move by Jay Gruden and the Washington Redskins. We've seen the Washington Redskins and the Dan Snyder do so many silly things over the years. They got an elite quarterback now. They sort of see that. And to me, they made the correct move and back in RG3 and not letting him go. And they can sort of build around him now and do well. And I think it's a good move. It's a very good move.
Okay. My take, Rodri, a little different than yours. Okay. I don't think this is a good move. I feel like this is a move of desperation. If this is something they were really considering all along, Jay Gruden would not have been coming out last year absolutely blasting RG3, saying that he's not progressing, that he's not making the proper reads, that he's not doing what he needs to do, not pulling him out to put Kirk Cousins in even when he's healthy, or Colt McCoy, who's no longer even on the roster. I really feel like what this says to me, and we see this a lot with bad teams, no offense, Washington, but this just spews of the fact that they have no solution at quarterback. And let's be honest, at number five, the chances of Jameis Winston or RG3 being there at number five is minimal. I have no doubt in my mind right now that if Washington was picking number two, that they would not have picked up RG3's option. You know what? I understand what everybody's going to say. You know what? RG3 is a long way away from the guy he was coming out of college that, people were debating between him or Andrew Luck, who was the best rookie quarterback. He's a long way away from that guy. A lot of what he did was based off of and predicated off of scrambling, running ability. I don't think he's that same guy. I think he plays scared. I think he checks the ball down. If you watch him play, I watched him play quite a few games last year.
Yeah.
His rookie year, he had no fear of throwing the ball 40, 50 yards down the field. And he checks the ball. I'll bet you 90% of his throws are 10 yards or less. All his throws seem to be checkdowns to tight ends, to fullbacks, to running backs. He does not stretch the field. He does not throw the ball down the field. And for my money, I'm just telling you, I understand a lot of people are going to say, are you crazy? We've seen enough of this kid. I know he's had a few bad games, but every quarterback has a few bad games. I would have kept Kirk Cousins. I would have kept Kirk Cousins as the fill-in guy. He's familiar with the team. He's familiar with the locker room. I think they've invested so much time and effort developing RG3 because of the compensation. Think about that. They traded three first-round picks for RG3 and got Kirk Cousins in the second round.
I know.
And you could make the argument, and I know he hasn't been great, but you could make the argument that Kirk Cousins has actually been more productive. You look at their win-loss records over the course of the last two or three years. You take out the rookie year when Kirk Cousins didn't get to play. It's pretty similar. The touchdown-to-interception ratio, it's pretty similar. Sure, Kirk Cousins has had a couple bad games. I remember the game, you know, in Washington against the Giants where he threw five picks. Absolutely. I can also remember Peyton Manning throwing five picks against the San Diego Chargers in San Diego. It doesn't make him a bad quarterback. I just think that this screams of desperation. You know, you mentioned trading Kirk Cousins. I'll tell you, just for my money, he's still a young guy. He's 26 years old. He's had some NFL experience. I know we said the same thing last year. This is not an extremely deep quarterback class. So if you're a team like Arizona, who we know needs a guy that can get the ball out, needs a guy that has a strong arm for Bruce Arians' offense, I would seriously consider this kid because he was drafted in the second round. You're probably not going to have to give up more than a second or a third. I say a third, maybe a fourth, I don't know. But you look at the quarterbacks that will be available there in the third round, and I think we can both universally agree, Rodri, that our top four guys, Garrett Grayson, Brett Hundley, Marcus Mariota, and Jameis Winston, are all going to be gone. So you take those guys away. Who's the guy that excites you more than Kirk Cousins? He's big. He's physical. He's got a big arm. He's got NFL experience. He's played in a pretty complex offense. If you look, you know, at the Shanahans, if you look at Jay Gruden, both of them are offensive-minded coaches. I think he needs to get back to his Michigan State roots. You know, I think he needs to get a team that wants to run the ball. You know, like Arizona and Bruce Arians, wants to run the ball, play action, and throw deep because he can do that. I'd love to see this kid end up in Arizona, backing up Carson Palmer. Just for my two cents, I'll give you a chance to rebut or give me your thoughts before we move on.
No, I agree. I mean, you look back at him at Michigan State, the last play of that bowl game. You know, when I think of Kirk Cousins, I think of that. I do see him in a Washington Redskins jersey. To me, they haven't done much help for RG3. RG3 winning the Heisman, you know, at Baylor, comes out that rookie year. You know, to me, he was outstanding. He takes him to the playoffs, and then he gets injured, Brian. I mean, I don't really think that he recovered tidy from that injury. I think I put in my chips on the table saying that I think the Redskins are smart enough to understand that he's recovered enough from that injury and that he's ready to move on. I know I've read some stuff of him in the off season. This is not like a blind get. I'm sure they, you know, Jake Gruden has seen enough of him to see that he can be the starting quarterback. Like you said, the draft picks that were given up for RG3, that's a big reason why I'm sure they've picked up his contract. But you know, the proof's in the pudding, as it always is. We're going to see him on the field and see how he performs on the field. That's the only way this question is going to be answered. I understand, you know, you make a fantastic point. And I'm a big fan of Kirk Cousins also. And you know, they could be making a massive mistake. They could be going with the wrong guy. If that's the case, a lot of jobs are going to be lost. But, you know, I think RG3 is the kind of guy you can put, you know, look at him as a person. I think he's steady enough and intelligent enough as a person to sort of back. And I think if he gets healthy and gets his game back to where it was in his rookie year, and you know he's had time off, he's had time to read the clipboard. I think this could be his year. You know, I just got a feeling about him. But you know, I guess we just have to wait and see on our bright. But I understand what you're saying. And Kirk Cousins is going to be a good quarterback wherever he goes. But
was
a Shanahan
question. Not to cut you off, but my question, because I hear what you're saying, buddy, but my question to you is, do we ever think, though, honestly, that RG3 physically is going to be where he was his rookie year. Do you think it's just strictly a mental issue right now? Because I have some serious question marks about his physical ability to do that. You know, he doesn't run nearly as much as he used to. I can't possibly believe that that's just because the coaches told him, hey, I don't want you to run as much, just check the ball down. You know what? I can't help but wonder, when you look at the fact that he does not throw the ball down the field anymore, the fact that he doesn't run anymore, you know, a large portion of that is mental, absolutely. You know what? They're in his head. He doesn't think he has time to throw the ball down the field. But I wonder, that hit he took on the knee, you know, sure, he's cleared to play, but you know what? Does he have 100% confidence in his ability, you know, that he had 2 or 3 years ago? I don't know. I don't know that he does.
I don't know, and I think that's the thing. I think that's what the progression is, Bri. You know, he was very well covered at the Baylor. He ran for his life in Baylor and scored many touchdowns. You come into the league, you've got to get coaches that can sort of, bring your game into its own. You know, bring your game into an NFL drop back quarterback type of game. And I think, you know, he's sort of making that transition, but it's taken him a long time. Has he made the transition now? I don't know if he has. You know, this we're gonna have to see, but he's got the ability to get out of the pocket. He's not going to be as crazy as he was in year one, running into players, you know, putting his body on the line the way he did. He needs to be a smarter runner, no doubt about that. I think Jay Gruden knows quarterbacks, and this is more than Jay Gruden. This is, you know, this is the front office as a whole. This is Dan Snyder. This is everybody making this decision and being in spot with this. We did see him and Jay Gruden bump heads last year, especially when he picked Cousins over him. I think that was a big thing. But you know, I believe RG3's man has to come back from that and be a good quarterback in this league. And you know, we're gonna see. I think he's gonna shock us in ways this year, Bryce, and become, you know, a good quarterback and become an elite quarterback again. You know, I can see it, but it's gonna be a lot. We're gonna have to wait and see, Bryce. You know, but you made some good points. I know what you're saying.
All right, Rodri. Well, we only have about 30 minutes left, so I think it's time to get into the 10 burning questions and or trades heading into the NFL draft. These are either questions about the NFL draft or trade opportunities that exist heading into the draft. And topic number one is Adrian Peterson. He has made it abundantly clear that he does not want to play in Minnesota. He did not feel as though the team supported him through his crisis and actually turned their back on him. Apparently, according to multiple sources, the Arizona Cardinals offered the Vikings a second-round pick, which was the highest compensation offered for Adrian, but they did receive multiple offers. Obviously, I don't think anybody believes, including me or you, that there's a possibility that he would be traded after the draft. If they trade, they're going to want that pick this year so they can build their team. Likelihood that Adrian Peterson moves?
I hate to say it. I think Teddy Bridgewater needs in there to be successful, but I think it's very likely, Bri. If he's not happy there, you know, he needs, for me, first and foremost, wherever he goes, Adrian Peterson needs to man up and admit to his mistakes and say, okay, I was wrong in doing this. I know the Dallas Cowboys might make a play for him. The Arizona Cardinals might make a play for him. Wherever he goes, he still needs to sort of own up to what he's done. And unless, you know, he's not gonna change much. But we know Adrian Peterson. We know he can play well. I actually see him. I don't think he leaves the Vikings, Bri. I know it's something. I don't think that team is going to let him go because he's that valuable to the rest of the squad. You know, he's valuable to Bridgewater. He's valuable to the passing game, and he's made his craft there. So, what would it take to get him out of it? I'm not sure if another team, given his age, I'm not sure what another team will give for him. Whether they give a first or second round pick, I don't think a team will give that, given his age and given the talent we have.
The Arizona Cardinals reportedly offered a second round pick for Adrian Peterson.
Right. Well, if they've offered that, then there's a good chance. You know, I didn't read that. Sorry. If they believe he's worth that at his age, then that's a possibility. Then there's a possibility he could go to Arizona. That's bad for Teddy Bridgewater. And you know, and I don't know what they're going to pick up instead of him. But you know, I was hoping he'd stay there for Teddy Bridgewater, you know, for his development. Yeah, you know, there's a good chance he'd go to Arizona if they'd offer in a second. I guess we'll see how it comes down to on draft day. But, yeah, there's a good chance then, Brian, if there's a second-round pick involved. But at his age, I think that's a fantastic offer for the Minnesota Vikings.
Yeah, and you know what? I think Adrian Peterson's going to move, and I'm going to tell you why. You just mentioned it. The closer and closer we get to the NFL draft, the more and more you hear that Todd Gurley could potentially go in the top 10 picks. I've heard all the way up as early as number 5 to Washington, number 6 to the New York Giants, on down. If he goes that early, you start looking at teams like Miami at 13, the San Diego Chargers, I believe at 17, you've got the Arizona Cardinals at 24, the Lions at 23, the Dallas Cowboys. There's just too many running back needy teams. You take him off the board, and Adrian's sitting there, and you got your second-round pick, and you're thinking, you know, we really want to fill a running back. So what do we do? Do we go after Adrian Peterson, or do we go after Randall Cobb or David Johnson or Amir Abdullah? I just think what's going to end up happening is there's going to be too much value to pass. Like you said, he's 30 years old. The Vikings realize they have him under contract for 3 more years till he's 32. But, you know, they already have Jarrett McKinnon, who plays pretty well. You know, Matt Asiata. Remember, they ranked in the top half in the NFL last year with no Adrian Peterson rushing. I think they need help other way. That's just my opinion. I think this whole thing has been somewhat of a ploy to increase value. I think if they don't get the value, obviously they would keep him. Adrian Peterson is a dynamic player, but like you said, at 30 years old, if they can get a second-round pick, you know, I think they're going to consider it, and I think they will end up making the trade. Storyline number 2, you may or may not have heard of, Shane Ray, the talented defensive end from Missouri. This week, just matter of fact, I think either yesterday or the day before, picked up on marijuana possession right before the draft. His foot has not been healing as well as he had hoped or anticipated. Many experts had moved him from a top 5 pick down to a top 15 or 20 pick. And at this point, Todd McShay said this morning on ESPN that he thinks he could potentially fall out of the first round with his latest transgression. Rodri, give me a percentage or a yes or no, up to you. What's the chance that Shane Ray falls out of the first round? Do you believe he will? Yes or no, and what's the percentage chance?
I don't think he falls out of the first round, to be honest, Bright. I mean, you look at the marijuana situation around the league. It's something that they're going to need to grab a hold of when he comes in. But, you know, you gather information about it. I've heard Albert Breer, you know, I heard over the last 3 months, you know, clubs have been showing willingness to overlook it. You know, Monday morning he was caught on this, you know, on this charge, and Missouri, coming up to Missouri, what's the story over there? They must have been keeping something behind. I don't know. I know a lot of teams, you know, think he's going to require toe surgery, you know, that's going to sideline him for about 3 or 5 weeks. And, you know, that's another big reason why he was falling. So this on top of that, I think he's too talented to fall out of the first round. But I definitely think this takes him out of the top 10, the top 15. I definitely think it takes him out of the top 15. But I don't think it takes him out of the first round, given his talent level. And, you know, teams have had problems, I guess, with players before. And we've seen players come in with these problems before and they've overcome them. This will come down to a character situation then. And you look back at his character, and from what I've read, you know, his character is pretty good. And I think he's, you know, he made a thing, and he apologized to his mother, his fans, you know, and prospective NFL teams, you know, and he said he was embarrassed, and he realized there's going to be consequences, and for that, you know, he mans up to it, and I don't think he falls out the first round, but I can't see it. He's too talented for me the way he played in Missouri, just from looking at his tape, and you know, with the NFL, like, it's a business. He's got this problem. Look at the players in history who've had this problem. You know, look at Ricky Williams and so on and so forth. Teams are sort of put their arm around them and make sure that they know they don't do it during the season. And, you know, it's a lot of players do it for pain. A lot of players, you know, use it for pain. And then that's a different story by another road we can go down. But I think he drops out of the top 15. I don't see him dropping out of the first round. And I'm quite high on about 80, 85% that he doesn't drop out of the first round. But he definitely drops a fair bit.
I'm going to say yes, he does fall out of the first round. And I'm going to tell you why. I'm going to go on the opposite end of the spectrum here. We've seen a guy like Justin Hunter drop, talented pass rusher, drop to the third round. To me, this is more of an intelligence thing. I'm sorry, like, I try not to bash these kids. I know they're youngsters, but you got 3 days, less than a week till the NFL draft. I mean, are you kidding me? This guy just cost himself millions of dollars. To me, this is almost as bad as going to the NFL scouting combine and testing positive for marijuana, Rodri. I mean, to me, it's almost like the only person who does that is if you're a chronic weed smoker. If you have some kind of addiction or you can't stop, if you're the Josh Gordon of the world, sorry, Cleveland. But, you know, a week till the draft and you're carrying marijuana on you driving around. To me, it just don't make no sense. I say he falls out, and I'm going to tell you why. You start talking about the pass rushers in this draft. I'm not even going to talk about outside linebackers like Vic Beasley, Dante Fowler, and some of these other guys. But you just start looking at how deep this defensive end class is, you know. We already know we got Randy Gregory, Alvin Dupree, Eric Armstead. We've got Owamagbe Uwadoza, from UCLA, who a lot of people have already projected as a first-round guy. Nate Orchard, who blew it up at the senior combine. Daniel Hunter. I mean, there's a bunch of guys that could potentially kind of leapfrog and take that spot that don't have absolutely any problems whatsoever. And I think what this kid did, and I love Shane Ray. I know the story, you know, single mom, you know, tried to make it on his own, specifically went to Missouri, Rodri, because that's where his dad went and set every single defensive end record, most sacks in a season, most sacks in a game. And Ray specifically went there to shatter every single one of his records, and he did, for the most part. I love the story. I love everything about the kid, other than the fact that he made some really, really stupid mistakes, you know? And I wish nothing more for the kid than him to be drafted in the first round, but I got to tell you, I'm hearing more and more his toe could be a lingering issue that'll take a lot longer than 5 to 6 weeks, so I'm thinking, okay, He's going to miss all of OTAs. He's going to miss all of your rookie practices. You know, he could potentially be missing training camp because we don't know if he's going to be ready to run by then. This is not even talking about the intelligence standpoint or the propensity to make mistakes. This is just strictly on the field. If you're okay with all of that, then you have to look at the fact that, you know, that he had this transgression a week before the draft. Like, it's, for me, this is just a huge red flag. So I'll say no. You said yes. We'll revisit this. One of your favorite prospects. I'm not as high on this kid, but he's got size. He's got speed. And that's something that a lot of teams covet. I know at one time from Todd McShay, you know, ESPN's draft analyst, from Mike Mayock, NFL.com's analyst, they had Jalen Collins going as high as number 15 to the Niners. Well, multiple reports have surfaced over the last week that a large reason why Jalen Collins only started 10 games at LSU was the fact that he failed multiple drug tests. So with that in mind, do you think that Jalen Collins now slides outside of the first round?
I mean, I looked at the tape of Jalen Collins. I looked at the tape on him against Alabama, going up against Amari Cooper. And just based on that purely, I didn't see him much as a first-round pick. in our mock draft last year, bro, you picked him late. I mean, I'm saying I picked Shane Ray to go to New Orleans at 13. By the way, last week that doesn't happen. I don't think now goes a bit later. But to me, Jalen Collins, he hasn't got the coverage skills to be a first round pick. I know a lot of teams have been saying it, but I just look at our Amari Cooper film. Amari Cooper schooled him in that game. Absolutely schooled him. His footwork was poor. You know, but I've seen him in other games play well. So you know, he comes back and plays well. But you know, in the big games, Brian, that was a huge game against Alabama, LSU, Alabama always is. Amari Cooper absolutely schooled him, and there's been other games I've seen dodginess in his footwork and in his coverage ability. And that 5-yard bump rule, I think, is going to hurt him as well. You know, just projecting that. So I don't see him as a first round pick. I think if somebody's going to pick him as a safety, then so be it. But given that, you look at the value of a safety situation, a safety position. And, you know, teams will do that these days. They will sort of say him as a safety, but play him in the slot. He could possibly be a slot guy, a nickel corner and safety. But we'll have to see how that goes, like a Devin McCourty type of player eventually. But I don't see that in the first year of his career, first 2 years of his career. Early second round, late. If he does slide in the late first round, as you had him last week, I wouldn't be surprised with that. But for me, given his tape and that Amari Cooper tape just completely put me off him. I don't know if he goes in the first round. I don't think he does, Bri. I don't think he does.
You know what, Aaron? I agree with you 100%. I've never seen the affinity with him being a first rounder. I look at the measurables, Roderick. 6'2", 200 pounds, runs a sub 4.5. I think some team will fall in love with the measurables, but if you just strictly look at him as a player, you take height out of it. You're looking at him from afar. There's no name on the back of the jersey. I think he's a third or fourth round player.
Yeah,
I really do. He needs a lot of development. I don't even know if he is going to be ready to step on the field year one. That's how much development I think he needs. But, you know, you can't teach height. You can't teach speed, as you know. And because of that, you know, he's going to get selected much higher than he probably should, probably within the top 64 picks. Question number four, and this is where, you know, some people, this is a pretty interesting one. So this is a rumor from Mike Florio of Pro Football Weekly. He states that several teams that he has talked to has viewed T.J. Yeldon as the third best running back, and some teams like Jacksonville and the Jets have even considered trading up into the first round to get him. If Gurley goes as early as anticipated, say the top 12 picks, more than likely Gordon is probably going to be gone by 2021. You start looking at the teams in the second half of the draft, Rodri, after pick number 20. There is quite a few teams there that do need a quarterback. You know, just to briefly go over it with you for a moment here, you've got the Detroit Lions, which we both know need a running back at 23, Arizona at 24. Carolina, they have Stewart, but remember they lost D'Angelo Williams. Could they potentially grab one? I'm not sure. Baltimore did re-sign Forsett. But they've stated multiple times they consider him a three-down, or they'd like to have more of a change of pace back. Dallas at 27, and the Indianapolis Colts at 29, just to name a few. What's your thoughts? Do you think there's a potential? What do you think the potential is? I'm going to just leave it vague. I put T.J. Yeldon because that's what the reports say. But what do you think the chances are that a third running back could be taken into round one, whether it be a trade-up or whether it be a team like Dallas or a team like Arizona reaching on a guy? What's your thoughts?
Yeah, you go back to our rankings, Brian. And remember, I had T.J. Yeldon 3 or 4 in my picks. So, I mean, I'm all over this guy. I love T.J. Yeldon. I watched him, you know, in Alabama when he sort of come through young as a freshman, and he just sort of took the lead by storm. He beat out a lot of good running backs. You know, that Alabama running back spot is one of the most coveted in college football. They recruit so well. They get some good players there. And for me, T.J. Yeldon come through a lot and together. It was an injury that let him down, and I think it's an injury that's dropped his stock. And I think he's as talented as it is. And, you know, I think about that second-round pick for Adrian Peterson, and you look at a guy like Ajay, or, you know, Duke Johnson, you know, David Johnson, DJ Yeldon. These kids, they're going to be around. Amir Abdullah, there's some good, talented running backs there that could start for a long time for your franchise. I think it's a very rich running back class, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if a team calls another TJ Yeldon and picks him that high. You know,
I think
he'd make a nice...
You know, I had a scout tell me, and this was about 3 years ago, he was a SEC scout. We had him on the show, and he said that in a conversation he had with the Alabama running backs coach at the time, they were asking him some questions about Trent Richardson, and the running back coach flat out said, you know, hey, listen, Trent is an unbelievable back, but the most talented back we have on the roster is T.J. Yeldon. And that was when he was a freshman. So, you know, that just to kind of add some validity to the praise, you know, I went back and forth on this, and it's tough because, you know, we've had my good friend Eric Galco from Optimal Scouting and the NFL Sporting News. He writes draft reports for NFL teams. He has a lot of contacts inside the league, and he's basically said absolutely not. There's no way a third running back could be selected. But the closer and closer I get, the more and more I feel like a third running back could be taken, Rodri. I'm kind of leaning towards you. The NFL is a copycat league. You look at the Seattle Seahawks, and how did they help to develop Russell Wilson? They had an unbelievable ground game that allowed them to work off play-action pass. You can't copy what New England is doing, because good luck finding another Tom Brady. But you can simulate, you can copy what Seattle has done, and Seattle was one play away from winning back-to-back Super Bowls, something that has not been done in a really, really long time. So with that said, I could see this happening, Rodri. I think that this is plausible. Is it T.J. Yeldon? I don't know. But you know what? If Mike Flo is right, you know, that, like I said, it as you mentioned, I don't think it's in left field, but I think it could be Yeldon. I think it could be Amir Abdullah, Duke Johnson. It really just depends on what your flavor is. So I'll put a vote down as a yes on possibility for a running back in the first round, a third running back. Trade rumor number 5, I'm hearing, and this is a big one. So I'm hearing, you know, we're going to get to the San Diego Chargers in a few minutes. But the New York Giants beat writer said that a source very, very close to Jerry Reese, the general manager, has said if there's any way that Marcus Mariota fell to them at 9, which, granted, a lot has to go right there, but let's just say for some reason Tennessee decides that they're absolutely going to draft Leonard Williams at 2. There's no need, obviously, the Jaguars at 3 or Oakland at 4 to draft a quarterback. Washington just picked up the option on RG3. And then the Jets at 6, that would be one you'd have to kind of go, I don't know. Atlanta at 8 is definitely not going to select a quarterback. And then you have the New York Giants at 9. The New York Giants at 9 would absolutely draft Marcus Mariota at 9 if he's available. And if he is not available, the Giants are planning to trade back to around 12 to 14 for Landon Collins, the talented safety. What's your thoughts on this? What do you believe percentage-wise? You know, 100% is absolutely, 0% is no. How close do you think this is kind of what the Giants' draft strategy is for pick number 1? Do you think that they would draft Marcus Mariota if he was sitting there at, let's just say something crazy happened and Mariota is sitting there at 9? Do you really think there's any possibility that the Giants would draft Mariota at 9? And if they do not draft Mariota, basically the beat writer saying it's all but a lock that they're going to draft Landon Collins. They're going to move back to 12 to 14. They're going to try and trade with Cleveland for pick number 12 so they can move up to grab the third wide receiver, Devontae Parker. Kind of, there's a whole elaborate scheme, but ultimately they're looking to either grab Marcus Mariota or Landon Collins in round one, the New York Giants. What's your thoughts? True, false, fact, fiction?
I think, if they're going off their big board at nine, I'll be shocked if Mariota's not on top of their board. But take nothing away from Eli Manning with this, but they have to take Mariota for me. I mean, you look at the future of that franchise, you can do what Green Bay done with Aaron Rodgers when they had Brett Favre. You can put him behind and make him learn for a couple of years. Eli Manning is the starter. There'll be no quarterback controversy. Eli Manning is the guy, no question in my mind. But you've got a Mariota there. That's your future. You know, that's the next 20 years, 15 to 20 years, your franchise in quarterbacks. You know, with Eli now, say 15 years then. To me, they'd be foolish not to do that. Mariota's not there. And then, you know, I think that's very possible. Mariota's not there, trading back for Landon Collins, 100%. Brian, me and you love this safety. He's number two on my overall players list. It's good to hear he's being talked about at that range, because I think he's going to go 10 to 15. To me, there's undoubtedly he's going to be the lead. He could be the leader of that secondary. I think that's very, very possible. In fact, I believe in that 100% that has to happen. For a team to pick him up in the top 15, They'd be lucky to have the kid, because he's a baller, you know, he's just a great player. And, you know, the Giants would be silly not to go at pick Mariota if he's at nine. I don't think he'd be there at nine. I think somebody's going to trade up the Jets or the Titans and you know, possibly the Raiders and pick him there. I think the Browns are possibly has another story. But, yeah, for me, somebody trades up. If he falls to nine, I'll be shocked. And if the Giants are there, you know, with him, I think they take him, but they make him sit bright. And I think it won't be a bad thing for him to sit for a couple of years and just to carry a clipboard like Aaron Rodgers did in Green Bay and then come on like Aaron Rodgers did. I mean, that's the Giants quarterback situation solved, you know, sort of like what happened with Andrew, you know, Peyton moving to the Broncos, allowing Andrew Luck to take over in Indianapolis. That's rare, you know, in this game to have an elite quarterback who you think has got the skills and talent level to be an elite quarterback to come in and take over from another one, a Super Bowl winning quarterback like Eli Manning, just like that. That's too valuable to pass up, especially at nine in the draft. I see that happening. If he's there, they take him. That's a smart business move, that is, in my opinion. And it's no knock on Eli Manning. Just get that straight. And that's just a business. That's just a smart business move. But if they get Landon Collins, then they land it anyway, because he's just an outstanding player. And I 100% in both situations, eh, Bri?
Yeah, you know, I'm having a little bit harder time wrapping my head around this one, Rodri.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you why. The reason why I'm having such a hard time wrapping my head around this is Eli Manning is 34 years old. We just saw Tom Brady win a Super Bowl at 37. Granted, I'm not saying he's Tom Brady, but Eli did throw for 4,500 yards last year in what many people would consider a down Manning. And he has 2 years left on his contract. 3 years left on his contract. I have a hard time believing that you bring in a quarterback to sit for 3 years. You know, keep in mind, the Aaron Rodgers philosophy when Ted Thompson drafted him was Brett Favre only had 1 year left. Granted, Brett Favre stayed an additional year, but I can't imagine drafting a quarterback when you know you only have 4 years on a quarterback and then your current quarterback is going to stay three more years. That's the only thing I would say. I think Landon Collins makes sense. But for me, do you need a backup quarterback more than you need a starting offensive tackle? Remember how bad this offensive line was last year?
Yeah.
This team is absolutely desperate for an offensive line. I don't think there is one Giants fan that wants to see James Brewer back on the field this year. They need an offensive tackle, something fierce. So if they go with a quarterback as opposed to an offensive tackle, to me, it's a long-term build. It tells you everything you need to know. We do only have a couple more minutes left. and I wanted to get to a bunch of things. I apologize to everybody that we didn't. We're going to get to two quickly here, Rodri, before we have to go. Ifo Ikpre Olumu, the talented corner from Oregon, who blew out his knee in the Rose Bowl, widely was considered the number one corner before injured. Reports are now surfacing that there may have been more structural damage than just an ACL tear, and that, like Brandon Thomas of the San Francisco 49ers, he may need to sit out a complete year. And some draft experts said that teams have completely taken him off their board in fear that he may turn out to be like Marcus Lattimore before or after round five. So do you believe he'll be drafted before round five or round five or later?
Yeah, it depends on our medical report. Bryce said if it's that bad, then later than round five. Given the talent level, you look at Marcus Lattimore. Marcus Lattimore's not in the league anymore. And, you know, I say later than round five, Bryce, if his knee is that bad, it's too much of a rehab, you know. And then after rehab, to come in the league and catch up to that speed is a big ask. I don't think they risk it. I don't think they risk it before round five. So post round five for me.
I'm going to say round four for me. I think the kid has just way too much talent, and in a league where it's super hard to find slot cover guys, guys who can cover the guy in the slot, who are physical, I think he will be drafted. It only takes one team to fall in love with you. Final rumor, Rodri, before the NFL draft, and this is something we've talked about for months, but is just picking up steam now. San Diego Chargers, Philip Rivers will not sign a contract extension because he does not want to go to L.A., which is where it looks like San Diego may be headed. There's multiple reports stating there is a three-team deal in the works that would have Philadelphia land Marcus Mariota, the Titans land Philip Rivers, and the San Diego Chargers land both the first-round picks of Tennessee and Philadelphia. What's your thoughts on that? Granted, it may not go down exactly like that, but do you think there is a high percentage chance that we could see Philip Rivers move? And what do you think the percentage chance, if any, that we could see Mariota land in Philly? All the reports are saying the reason why you have not seen a contract extension done by Philly for Bradford is he's going to be part of that deal.
Right, yeah, so I was going to say Bradford. I think Bradford's got to be involved with that deal. Tennessee are rubbing their hands with that one if they land Philip Rivers. And, you know, Mariota ends up with his college coach from Oregon in Chip Kelly. So, you know, it works well for them. There's got to be some problems with Phil Rivers and that and moving to L.A. I think Tennessee, they got to be looking at we get Philip Rivers. He'll be happy there. I think he's a Southern guy, and I think he's just going to be happy there. For me, so long as that you bring in a Bradford into the deal, if you can bring another quarterback into the deal, and I can see it happening without another quarterback, I don't think it's going to happen. You need that at one more quarterback, and I think you've got a possible deal there, and I think something like that's going to happen, Brian. I see the Browns getting involved also. I think the Browns and Johnny Manziel is going to be dealt. I can see that happening also, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. I think it's a high percentage chance of happening, but Philip Rivers doesn't seem happy. There's so many reports coming out now that he can't be lying, he can't be false. And, you know, I know he's not happy in San Diego. I can see him being moved. If he's not happy, then just move the guy. I mean, he's getting on in age anyway, and they need to move forward. So it depends on which quarterback they can get for now. San Diego Chargers need to make that move, especially if they move to L.A., then, you know, they can't go forward with Philip Rivers even if he's not happy, because he's not going to play his ball. He's not going to play his football there, so... Hopefully they can get a Kirk Cousins, possibly, if they get to, you know, see how that goes. Brock Osweiler, I think, is another one I'd select. I think he's a franchise quarterback. To me, he can be a franchise quarterback. So, yeah, we'll see how that goes. But, yeah, definitely a possibility of that, right? Definitely a possibility, high possibility.
Yeah, well, if Philip Rivers does not want to go to L.A., his wife is from Nashville, Tennessee. I could definitely see the connection there. What I will tell you, folks, a little over 48 hours till the NFL draft kicks off. Next week, Rodri, we will start providing our NFL grades. We will start in the NFC. We're going to try and get through all the NFC in one show, and then all the AFC in one show, but we may need to break it down into three or four shows. But we're definitely going to start with the NFC West and the NFC East. So you can write that down. You at home can also write that down. From all of us here at the Sports City Chef's Kitchen, I just want to thank my co-host, Rodri Jones, for stopping by, providing analysis. We appreciate you stopping by. Continue to listen in. We'll see how many of these rumors came to fruition. We may have a guest on next week as well to also provide some opinions on the draft and provide some grades as to how everything went. From all of us here at the Sports City Chef Studio, I'm Brian Hughes from the Sports City Chefs. Check us out at www.sportscitychefs.com, where you can find player interviews, blogs, and our articles. From all of us here, we tell you farewell until next week.
Hi, hello, and welcome back to the 1983 National Football League draft.
And with the first round pick, John Elway, Jim Kelly.
Welcome back to the
draft. And with the first round pick, Dan Marino.
NFL's draft.
And with the first round pick, Deion Sanders.
I was kind of scared. I thought the show was going to take me. I would ask somebody that had to put me on layaway.
Welcome back to the
NFL draft.
Good young players with the draft all back.
Year in and year out.
Welcome back to the
draft. Wide receiver, running back.
Tackle.
Quarterback.
Every year in the draft.
There has been a trade.
Ricky Williams.
John Dawson. Honor changes. Saturday.
Welcome back to the
draft.
Defensive line.
Wide receiver.
Running back.
Tackle.
Quarterback.
So I'll get into that.
Wearing your signing bonus.
Come on, sale. Welcome back to the
NFL draft.
And with the first round.